Good evening. Welcome back to the Hour 3 Junction Point of Darkness Radio. Is that Junction Point?
We have Junction Points?
Why not? We should. Doesn't cost us anything extra.
It's just like the old, what's the show with Casey the Train Conductor? And
I don't know. You grew up in Minnesota, man. I grew up with Ray Rayner and Garfield Goose and Friends and Bozo. You had Casey and his
Sunshine Band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what was it? Casey's Friendship Bunch or something with the train? He was a, I don't know. Anyway, welcome back to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. I am your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, co-host and producer and male exotic dancer on the weekends, well, Mr. Tim Dennis.
Guys, hey, got to make a living.
We have events up on our website. Go check them out. Bobby Mackey's Music Club Live Ghost Hunt and Conference, hosted by Ghost Adventures and Darkness Radio, January 20th through the 22nd at one of the most haunted locations in the United States, as featured in the first premiere episode of Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel. Watch that show every Friday night on Travel Channel. Come hunt with Ghost Adventures crew, Zach, Nick, and Aaron. You're going to have a great time. They have Mark and Debbie Constantino, the EVP specialists. I'll be out there. They'll also have Archbishop James Long. A lot of cool stuff going on. There's only about 20 to 25 tickets left for this event. Tickets are going fast, and it's a great time. So give the gift of ghost hunting, and go check out darknessevents.com. Sign up for that event, the Waverly Hills Sanitarium 2009 event, the UFO Isetti Ranch event that we're doing in August 2009, or join us out with Phenomenology. Can you say that one 10 times faster, Tim?
Phenomenology.
Yeah. Celebrity speakers include Chris Fleming, Patrick Burns, John Zaffis, Adam Bly, Tiffany Johnson, Chip Coffey, Mark and Debbie Constantino, Dave Schrader, Dr. Barry Taff, Stacey Jones, Bill Murphy, and more. For more information, go to our site and check it out. We're going to be in Gettysburg. Phenomenology, where fact and fiction collide. The Eisenhower Hotel, March 26th, 27th, and 28th in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Go get tickets right now. There are still some of the ghost hunts available. I think the Civil War Orphanage and Eisenhower Hotel, I think, are still open for ghost hunting. Smaller groups, great times out there. And it takes place again March 26th, 27th, and 28th. Tickets are $75 right now. January 1st, they jump to $150. Still a bargain at any price, but go in, grab tickets right now at just $75 by going to darknessevents.com. Ladies and gentlemen.
Of course, join me in my living room tomorrow at 3 o'clock. I'll be sitting around in my boxers and watching the Vikings.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Play the Falcons.
Yeah.
My son and I are going to sit down. We're going to watch it. We got some tequila lime chicken wings. And that's what it'll sound like about a half an hour after I eat them.
That's right.
And let's get back into tonight's show. And I'm excited to have our guest with us, Tim. Our guest is Leslie Rule. She's a best-selling author of 2 suspense novels, 4 nonfiction books on ghosts. She's also published dozens of articles in national magazines, including a November 2005 article on ghosts and murder in Reader's Digest. Leslie grew up in a family of writers in a creaky old house on a windy cliff which overlooked Puget Sound. Her mother is author Ann Rule, and she made it no secret that the house was haunted, says Leslie. She loved to tell company about the ghosts that shared their home. When she was a little girl, she even thought she knew she lived in a haunted house. Leslie's new book out is called Ghost in the Mirror, and Leslie documents more than a dozen of stories of paranormal apparitions that reveal themselves on the other side of the looking glass. So welcome, for the first time in the Darkness on the Edge of Town, Leslie Rule. Thank you for joining us this evening, Leslie.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. We got a chance to meet you about 2 years ago out at the Stanley Hotel.
Yes, another haunted location.
Yeah, and you did a fascinating talk there. And saw this book. Now, you know, again, Tim and I were joking about it in the beginning of the show. I said, you know, not only is it, mirrors freak me out anyway. I don't know what it is about them. Maybe it's because there's a big bald guy staring back at me when I'm obviously a good-looking young 21-year-old guy with a full head of hair.
That would be spooky.
Yeah, but I've never been keen on mirrors, especially in really crazy haunted locations. And then not only do you have that, but you've also got the creepy little doll looking in the mirror. So really well done on the book cover. That's going to freak me out enough just in there. And these are real cases of spirit encounters. What got you involved in this line of doing any investigations? Were you finding a lot of stories where spirits were involved with mirrors?
Yes, definitely. After writing 3 books of ghost stories, 2 ghost stories, I talked to so many people who had these encounters with the mirror. I decided to make that the theme of this book. And mirrors are one of the top places where ghosts are seen.
Yeah, now see, that's going to work on a lot of people tonight. They're going to be sleeping and checking out that mirror out of the corner of their eyes. Is it believed, Leslie, that that's a portal?
Many people believe that it's a portal, but it also could be that it's like we have sort of a filter that prevents us from seeing what our culture tells us does not exist. But when we're looking at the world in reverse, in reflection, it disables the filter so we're able to peer into the other side. So it changes our perspective just enough that that our defenses drop.
You know, that's an interesting theory as well, because I grew up in a story I'd heard from a friend of mine's mom was that if you looked in the eyes of a cat, you could see spirits moving around the room if there were ghosts there.
Really? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, well, I'd never been able to get a damn cat to stand still long enough because, you know, you try to hold them still and they just start clawing and acting freaky. But yeah, I guess the story was that, you know, I mean, because I guess dogs and cats are very sensitive, and you know that,
definitely.
You're a pet person. Dogs and cats are very sensitive, but they say that cat's eyes are have the uncanny ability to capture ghost movement in them. If you can get your cat to sit still and you think your house is haunted, you might want to check that out. You know, and I don't recommend you, you know, go out and get dead cat eyes or anything weird because I don't think it works as well. But this is that's definitely a strange deal. And with the mirror images, I mean, that makes sense. You're kind of turning off the filter where you know you shouldn't see it in front of you, but in the reflection, it's not as big a deal.
Yes, and you know, it's funny because the encounters have been described to me in the exact same way. Every single person who has told me about seeing a ghost in the mirror will tell me they're looking in the mirror and they notice something in the reflection behind them. They spin around to see what's there. There's nothing there. And then they look back and the figure will remain in the mirror.
Yeah, now, have you seen that piece of video? And I don't know if this has been debunked or not, but it's a young Asian girl. A little girl, and maybe I'll try to get the video from YouTube and show it to put it on our website for Mike or Delia to post. But she's talking and she's kind of going back and forth with the family. And in the final time when she turns around, it's one of those three-way mirrors, so it's kind of deal. And when she turns back around, the one reflection doesn't turn; it just keeps staring forward.
I've heard about that one. You know, and it's hard to say whether it's real or not. Those things are so easy to fake these days. You actually have to talk to the person who caught it to see if they're sincere or not.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, when you're doing the research for these type of books, your mom writes true crime novels, or not novels, but true crime books.
Mm-hmm.
Was she running into doing the research, was she running into ghost stories of the murdered people at these locations?
Oh, yeah. We've had a lot of that, and that's why the third book I wrote is called When the Ghost Screams, True Stories of Victims Who Haunt, because I found so many sites where murders occurred where there were found spirits. And I'd always swore that I wasn't going to do true crime because that's my mom's genre, but our genres collided with this because that murder is the biggest ghost maker there is.
Right.
And there's been a lot of ghost sightings associated with her stories. For instance, she wrote a case of David Brown. It was an Orange County, California case. And this man had convinced his 14-year-old daughter to shoot her stepmother, his wife, telling the girl that it was the only way his life would be spared. He convinced his young daughter that the wife was plotting to kill him. Well, it wasn't true at all, but the girl did shoot her stepmother, and she ended up going away, being sent away for it. And he and his mistress, who was the victim's younger sister, went back to the home, and they weren't able to stay there because they would hear the sobbing of the dead woman.
Oh, really?
Yes, and it was so bad. They had tried to sleep in the room where she'd been killed that they dragged the mattress out to the living room and slept there. And when my mom went by, I usually take the photos for her, but I wasn't with her, so she went by the house and took some shots of the house for her book. And she was startled when she got them back from the chemist store, because there was the figure of a woman with long blonde hair, which resembles the victim, standing in the front window. And at that time, it was an Asian family that lived there. And there was nobody there that resembled this woman. And the figure seemed to be caught between the window and the curtain. And she was so puzzled by it that she went back at the same time of the day and tried to recapture the image, but she wasn't able to do it. So it's possible that the victim, Linda Brown, was still on the premises for some time, if she may still be there for all we know.
Let's talk about now. You've got a couple, would you say three or four books total now that deal with the paranormal?
I have four nonfiction books of ghost stories.
And let's kind of glaze over each one so that everybody knows what to look for. The first book that you wrote was called what?
Coast to Coast Ghosts, True Stories of Hauntings Across America. And then Ghosts Among Us, True Stories of Spirit Encounters. When the Ghost Screams, True Stories of Victims Who Haunt. And Ghost in the Mirror, Real Cases of Spirit Encounters.
Well, let's go. Before we go to our first break here, from Coast to Coast Ghosts, why don't you tell us one of your favorite stories from that book?
I think that'll have to be a Key West story. And there's a place there called Captain Tony's Saloon, and it's been there for decades. And Captain Tony is the one-time mayor of Key West, and he told me about many years ago when he was preparing to chop down a big old tree in his courtyard, an old-timer happened by and said, "You can't cut down that tree. That's the old hanging tree." And he proceeded to tell Captain Tony that when he had been a boy in the late 1800s, that he had often visited the area to watch the hangings, and that's what the kids would do on Saturday afternoons. You know, it was before video games. They had to do something.
Okay.
And one Saturday, he was sitting there enjoying a sandwich, watching a woman in a blue dress being hanged for murdering her husband and her children. And he described how the woman took a very long time to die and how she'd been wearing a blue dress. Well, this was really startling to Captain Tony because he had seen the apparition of a woman in blue gliding through that very courtyard one evening after he had closed. And it so frightened his girlfriend, who had been living upstairs with him, that she moved out and never came back. So Captain Tony agreed that he couldn't chop down the tree, and he simply enclosed it when he remodeled and he added on to the bar. So to this day, that old hanging tree grows in the middle of the bar, and people still report seeing the apparition of the woman in blue.
Oh, really? Well, that's one way to get people to come into your bar.
Yeah, it's a lot of people are using the ghost angle as a publicity tool.
Yeah. You know, it was funny, Leslie, one of my favorite deals, when I went to a ghost hunt with Richard Crowe, which we mentioned in the first row, our first interview with Brian Riggi, Richard Crowe out of Chicago takes you on a ghost tour and stops at a few haunted pubs. And what was funny is one of the famous stories, a gentleman was in the back room and had gotten drunk and fell backwards and I think hit his head on the pipe or on a radiator and died. And people go sit back in that chair and they'll feel hands grab at their ankles or at their legs. And they all went in there, and it was a small room, and everybody's jam-packed in there. So I sat at the bar chatting with the pretty bartender, and she goes, I said, "So do you believe in the ghost stories?" And she goes, "Yeah, but it doesn't happen back there." And I go, "What do you mean?" She goes, "You want to see something cool?" I go, "Yeah." So she grabbed a balloon, and she took it back in the room and just threw it back in the corner and came back out to the bar. And we sat there, and we're drinking, and you could see the balloon bouncing its way merrily across the room. And I thought, okay, well, I can feel a little breeze. There is some venting going on. But this balloon, as it approaches the door frame, it dips under the door and comes out towards me. Now, she takes a bottle of scotch and sets it on the bar at the end of the bar, and the balloon makes its way down the bar and stops and hovers over the bottle of scotch.
Interesting.
So I'm thinking, well, she knows. She's probably done this 1,000 times. She knows where that balloon's going to stop every time. So I mentioned that to her. She goes, "Move it anywhere you want." So I picked it up, and I went and I put it over by the windowsill, and I didn't touch the balloon, just left it there, and it sat there for 5 minutes, and I thought, yep, I busted her. And sure as hell, that thing started to bounce slowly across the room, went and hung up over the... So while everybody's in the back room trying to get their ankles grabbed, I'm sitting there watching the ghost play with a balloon and chase a bottle of scotch. So
very eerie.
Yeah, kind of cool. It was a pretty neat deal. We have to take a quick break. Our guest is... Leslie Rule. We're talking about a great, fascinating new book that she has out. It's called Ghost in the Mirror. The book is available everywhere right now. You can go to our website, click on the link. It'll take you to Amazon so you can order your copy. We'll be back with more Leslie Rule right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're here with you every Saturday and Sunday night, 9 to midnight. If you miss any part of the show, check out our website. Click on the Darkness Radio podcast, and you can check out all of our past shows. They cut out all the commercials, so you get to listen to them commercial-free. It's an amazing way to listen to the show if you miss them in any way, shape, or form. Tell your friends, family, and relatives about it, and let them know about Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show as well. We're going to welcome back to the show Leslie Rule, author of Ghost in the Mirror. Now, you were telling us about one of your favorite stories from the first book, and your second book again was?
The second book of ghost stories is Ghosts Among Us, True Stories of Spirit Encounters.
Okay, and what's one of your favorite stories from that book?
I think that would have to be the story of the haunted clown doll. Now, it's not...
Haunted clown doll. Tim's like, dude, I don't understand why people are afraid of dolls or clowns. It just doesn't make sense.
Neither one's scary.
Neither one are scary?
Nope.
Did you see Poltergeist?
Yeah.
Do you remember that creepy clown grabbing the kid and dragging him under the bed?
Not even close to being scared.
Didn't bother you at all, huh?
Nope.
That's weird.
Nope.
But he's afraid of the Easter Bunny, Leslie.
Scary as hell.
Yeah. So it's a haunted clown doll.
Yes, it's not just places that are haunted. Objects can be haunted, too. And this was purchased by a woman in Oregon named Renee, who was playing around on the computer, and she stumbled upon an eBay auction that was just about to end. And on an impulse, she started to bid on this doll because he was advertised with a really special feature. He moved on his own, but he wasn't battery operated. So she paid about $500. She won the auction, and she immediately thought, what have I done? And she was scared to bring him to her home, so she went and got a post office box. And when he arrived, he seemed benign enough, so she brought him home. And he hasn't really done much damage there, and she's gotten used to him. She's not spooked by him. But she has found him in various places of the house where she has not placed him. And she'll find him with his arm up when there was nobody around that could have logically moved him. And she's got a number of EVP from him. One night she got an EVP of a voice saying, "Wake up." And when she played it back the next day for her daughter turned white and said, "I heard that during the night and it woke me up." I have a link to her website on my website, and people can actually go to Renee's website, and listen to some of the EVP. It's very interesting.
Awesome. Give your website so people can find it.
It's www.ghostygirl.com.
Okay, and that's Ghosty Girl. Spell that out. Is it...
G-H-O-S-T-Y...
Okay.
G-I-R-L.
Okay, ghostygirl.com, and there is a link there, you said, so that they can go find...
They can go to a number of places, including Renee's website, and they can see photographs of Vincent Price, her haunted clown doll, and listen to some of the EVPs she's captured.
Awesome. Yeah, I know Mark and Debbie Constantino have been working with toys and getting strange EVPs. We did at Rolling Hills Sanitarium. We had gotten a few of the dolls from the room that they allowed us to sell in a charity auction there. And they had a big doll and a little doll, and Mark and Debbie did some work with it. And it was funny. We brought the dolls up, and we sold them, and we sold the CD of the EVPs that Mark got from the dolls. And the large doll, the lady bought it and came back like an hour later and handed it to Mark and Debbie and said, "I don't want this doll in my house. Take it home."
Really? Well, yeah. That might have been smart.
Yeah, could be. Do you get a lot with haunted possessions like that?
Yeah, quite a bit. I had another case where a woman had purchased a piano at an antique store, and it came with the ghost of an elderly gentleman, and he played it at night, and she would be in bed, and she would hear the music drifting through the walls, and she had a guest one night who got up and actually ran into the guy in the hallway. And she didn't mind. She liked having the ghost, and she liked hearing the music. And she one day had to move to a smaller place and gave the piano away. So we don't know what happened after that. And there was another case of a dresser with a mirror that was at an antique shop. And the people there had it because a woman had called them up and said, "Please come get my dresser. I don't care what you give me for it. I just want it out of here." And she had been seeing faces in the mirror, and there had been some suicides at her home. And no word yet whether or not the people who bought the dresser are still seeing ghosts. They were warned, but we haven't heard back yet if they have seen anything.
Interesting. All right. And then now going into your next book, which was the book about the real crimes and the murder of victims. Now, how often, I mean, and that's just seems... really sad to me. How often do you find in murder sites that there is some type of haunting activity? Now, we know that there's a lot of ghost stories, you know, or a lot of, well, it should be haunted because there was a brutal murder here, but there's really never anything there when people do an investigation. How often do you find, though, that the haunted locations are either a victim of murder or an accidental death?
When I go to a site where the cause of the haunting is unknown, it's very common for me to do an archival research and to find either a murder, an accident, or a suicide in or near the vicinity. And a lot of times I'll get a description of somebody that matches up what's being seen. So it is very common. Another horrible tragedy that resulted in some paranormal activity was in the 1970s here in the Seattle area. We had the serial killer, Ted Bundy, was snatching girls. And I was a teenager at the time, and this, of course, turned out to be my mom's first book, The Stranger Beside Me, because she had known the serial killer before she got her a book contract to write about it, and had gotten a contract without any idea that her friend would turn out to be the killer. But on one horrible day, it was a hot July Sunday at Lake Sammamish Park, and it was blanket-to-blanket people, and two girls were snatched on that day. And one of the girls was seen leaving with a man with his arm in a sling who claimed to be Ted. And this was the first anybody heard the name Ted. And he asked this young woman, Janet Ott, to go with him and to help him load his sailboat onto his Volkswagen. And she was a really nice young woman that liked to help people, and he seemed like he was in need, and it was a ruse. He didn't have a broken arm, which we found out later.
Right.
But she left with him, and that night, her husband was in California, and he was taking a class. And so he was out of town, and he had no idea that his wife had not come home from the lake that day. But he fell asleep in his chair next to the phone, waiting for her to call. And he came wide awake at 10 o'clock, and he heard her voice saying, "Jim, Jim, Jim, come help me."
Really?
Yeah,
he told my mom that story.
I think that there's probably a lot of times when there's paranormal activity, but it's such a private thing that family members don't share it with the public.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. That gave me the shivers.
Yeah, that really does give you the chills. It was such a sad story.
Out of that book, can you give me another one of your favorite stories? I mean, that just fascinates me. Actually, let's take a quick break. We have to take our bottom of the hour break. We'll come back, and if you could give me another story of that, and then we'll start covering into your new book as well.
Okay.
All right. So stay tuned. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about When the Ghost Screams. You're listening to the best of Paranormal Talk Radio. Welcome back to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening is Leslie Rule. We're talking about her books that she's done on the paranormal and on ghosts. And just before we went to break, we were talking about When the Ghost Screams, which was your third book, and it talks about murder victims and the apparitions and things that have happened around those. I asked you for one more of your stories on that before we went to break. So do you have one more you could share with us?
Definitely. There's a place in Arvard, Oklahoma, and it's called Vina Ray's Grill and Graze. And it's quite haunted, and they have seen the ghost of a woman there in green, and she appears so real and solid that they didn't realize she was a ghost till she disappeared. Now, the waitress was really startled because it was a quiet day, and they didn't hear the little bell ring, so she hadn't expected a customer to be there, but suddenly there was this woman in a green skirt sitting at the table. So she grabbed her little tablet and proceeded to walk to the table, and then her jaw fell open because the woman was suddenly gone. Well, what makes this especially creepy is that Vina Ray's Grill and Graze is in an old school gymnasium. The school's no longer there because the town population dwindled to such a short supply that they didn't need a school any longer, and the entire thing was razed except for the gymnasium. Well, in 1956, on March 13th, the Tuesday afternoon, there was a young woman named Ann Newland, who was 22 years old, and she was on her way to that school gym to meet her husband, who was the coach there. But poor Ann didn't make it. She was found burned to death in her car, which had apparently been run off the road in an unsolved homicide. According to the owners of Vina Ray's, everybody in town knows who the killer is. But to this day, they're too afraid to speak up and talk to the police about it. So there's a lot of paranormal activity. And not only have they seen the ghost of poor Anne, but they've also smelled burning hair. And Nan Wheatley, who's the owner, told me that the first time she smelled it, she said it, she was just sick to her stomach. There's also been an apparition of a headless woman seen floating through the place. Things get rearranged in the freezer. And the owner actually felt hands at one time pick her up and toss her down the hallway. She wasn't harmed. She was just really startled.
Wow.
So this is a really interesting place.
Yeah, I would say. Now, have you heard any ghost stories at all about JonBenet Ramsey? I've heard and seen some really strange photographs taken outside of her home where there's a strange mist-like.
I wouldn't be surprised, but no, I haven't investigated that. But I would not be surprised at all.
Interesting. All right. Well, your new book now we want to talk a little bit more about is out currently. It's called Ghost in the Mirror, Real Cases of Spirit Encounters. How many stories did you collect throughout this book?
Oh, over 50.
Over 50? Holy cow. Okay.
Yeah, maybe even more. I didn't actually stop to count. See, some are just a page and some are 5 or 6 pages.
Sure.
It just depends on how much information is there.
Now, I'm curious, too, with the doll on the cover. Have you ever done any research on another thing that I had been told, I don't know if it's an old wives' tale, is that the reason that they started to make dolls' eyes close at night was because the spirits used the eyes of the dolls as portals. Have you heard that or no?
No, that's very, very creepy, though.
Yeah, well, that's what they said, that the doll's eyes used to, they believed were portals and that the spirits would hide inside the doll through the eyes. So the idea was that they would lay the dolls down at night and the eyes would close so that the spirits couldn't gain entrance.
That's very interesting. But no, I haven't heard that, but that's really creepy.
Which is kind of funny that I guess that, you know, 18th of an inch piece of plastic that shuts over the eye keeps the ghost out, Tim. Now we know.
That's
it? Yeah, that could be. Well, I took that, that was an antique doll that that I took with me to Thornwood Castle while I was, I do the photos for my books. My editor wanted a creepy cover photo.
So and that's I where they did Rose Red, right?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. You know it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real castle that was disassembled and shipped piece by piece to the Tacoma, Washington area and completed in 1911 for a wealthy family there. And today it's a bed and breakfast, and it's an absolutely beautiful place. And the night I was there, I was with a friend, and we were all alone. There was nobody else staying there. And I was I spent a couple hours in the hallway. There's so many mirrors there. I was trying all different angles and really focused on taking my pictures. When I got this really distinctive feeling that somebody was standing behind me. And I've had this sensation described to me dozens of times, but this is the first time that I experienced it. There was no question in my mind that my friend was standing behind me, but when I turned around, she wasn't there. She was back in the room about 4 or 5 doors down the hall. And I had it was a palpable feeling that somebody was there. But spookier, when I fell asleep that night, I came wide awake because it was as if somebody had their hand on the bedpost and was violently shaking it. There were no earthquakes that night. But that place has had a lot of activity, including there were a number of people staying at the bridal suite one night, and they woke up to what they thought was a party going on in full swing downstairs, so they hurriedly got dressed. And as they came down the big winding staircase, suddenly it all fell silent. There was no one there.
Really? Well, that seems, yeah, that's a pretty common. I said where I grew up in Medina, Illinois, we used to, everybody in our neighborhood used to talk about hearing parties, especially if you were in the basement of the house, and most of us were fan sleepers. This was, you know, before the advent of central air in everybody's house. You just had like the one window unit mm-hmm. upstairs, you know, but everybody I knew slept in the basement, all my friends, and we all used to hear these weird parties at night. And it was just strange that the whole town, I said, well, at least we got a party atmosphere of ghosts. But I had actually, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, and I want to talk to an engineer or even a hearing specialist. One of the things I always thought was interesting is the fan creates a white noise, correct?
Yes.
Well, if sound, we know sound waves travel because radio waves are still going through outer space. This show is being transmitted to outer space right now, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's out there, it just needs something to hit to be picked up. Well, we lived not even a half mile away from Medina Golf Course, which was a big country club, and there were parties there every weekend, and, you know, bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs and everything kind of mitzvahs and weddings and anniversary parties. And it was usually heard in the late night hours when it would be going on, when your fan was on. As soon as you turn the fan off, the sound would vanish.
Well, you know, there could very well be a scientific explanation for that. That's really possible. But I think, well, sometimes people try to explain away EVP in
right.
that way. But if they'll say, well, we're picking up on a commercial on a radio somewhere. If that's the case, why don't people capture music? And why is it so specific to what they're investigating?
Right. I do believe, and Tim will tell you, Tim is a radio kind of guru here. Tim, I mean, there's a lot of stray radio waves. There's
right.
a lot of things
absolutely.
Going. And the most common phrases heard on radio are yes, no.
Numbers.
Because
mm-hmm.
they're given times, dates,
yep.
temperatures.
Yep.
So a lot of that can just be random filtering. But I do agree, Leslie, if you're asking, you know, did you die here? Yes. right? And how did you die? Gunshot or painful or something like right. that comes through. And it's right in timing with what you're asking. That's one thing. You're right. Why don't we get more? I don't know, Tim, FM and AM band. Can you explain that to me? AM band, like we could listen to WGN from Chicago here in Minnesota at night.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in Alabama in the middle of the night being able to tune in WGN all the way from Chicago on the AM band, but we couldn't hear FM. Why does AM travel so much better?
If I remember right, I think AM travels it's been a while since since I've had to remember this. AM travels the length of the land and depends on weather conditions, and anything can boost or amplify an AM signal. An FM signal isn't infinite. It stops at a particular, like say you're going into a valley.
Uh-huh.
It won't follow you into the valley. You'll lose it. It's one straight line.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the, I'm sorry, did I?
No, that's fine. Yeah, I was just...
I was going to say that the first time I participated was with Debbie and Mark Constantino. We went to the Donner Memorial Park in Truckee, California, and we got some very specific voices on tape there. Now, for your listeners who aren't aware, the Donner Memorial Park pays tribute to the pioneers, the ill-fated pioneers who became snowbound there in the 1850s, some resorting to cannibalism.
Right, and I heard the EVP you got said pass the fork. Was that right?
No. Well, that wasn't, I don't think we got that one, but we got we're hungry, look for the bones, help us. And then also some names, which turned out to be, like for instance, Frank, which turned out to be a name of somebody who had actually died there.
Really? Interesting stuff. Yeah, see, this is the locations, when you start getting into locations like that, I can't even... You know, just the pain and the horror that this poor group had to go through. And, I mean, Mark and Debbie, they're crazy with how they're able to get EVPs. For those of you that are interested, you can go to spirits-speak.com. And find Mark and Debbie's website there. And I think that they do have some of the different EVPs they've collected from all over on the website.
Yeah, I linked to their website on mine also. But I think that one of the reasons they're so successful is Debbie is very psychic, and she won't brag about it, but she is extremely psychic, and we tend to see better results with both ghost photography and the capturing of ghostly voices when there is a psychic person present.
Really? Yeah. Well, and now, do you feel you know Mark and Debbie? Do you feel that one of the? I mean, I know Debbie. She claims she's not really psychic or sensitive, but she. I mean.
She doesn't like to brag, but she is. I've been to places with her before, and I've seen her come up with things, really specific things that she shouldn't have known.
No, good. See, Tim, now we got to start wearing those tinfoil hats when we're hanging out with her.
Yes,
stylish.
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, all of your naughty thoughts are going to come back to haunt you, Tim Dennis.
But I'll be blinging, baby.
That's right. We're going to take one more break here before the top of the hour. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio with our guest, Leslie Rule. We'll be back with more. Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest is Leslie Rule. She's written four different books on the paranormal. We're talking about her new book, Ghost in the Mirror, Real Cases of Spirit Encounters. And again, if you'd like more information on Leslie and the books that she's written, you'd like to order them or you'd like to contact her, you can go to ghostygirl.com, G-H-O-S-T-Y, GIRL.com. You can also go to Amazon.com, type in Leslie Rule. You'll find all of her books there and be able to purchase them. I highly recommend them. Great reads. Now, tell us. Let's get a couple more of your favorite stories from the Ghost in the Mirror book.
Well, there's places from all over the country. One that's kind of interesting is the Wine Cellar in North Reddington Beach, Florida. And this is a classy restaurant, and there is the ghost of a former custodian there. The man died of a heart attack decades ago while he was at work, and he was alone in the building. And to this day, his apparition has been seen. It actually is not a solid, clear apparition. It's more of a misty figure that has materialized in the kitchen. And most creepy, an employee found a table that he had just set and that no one else had access to with the silverware rearranged to spell out the words, "Help me."
Really? Now, do you investigate these locations when you're writing on them, or do you collect the tales from all the different people?
I go to as many as possible. I went to this place. What I do is I usually choose historical cities, mm-hmm. and I prefer places on the water.
Sure.
They tend to be the most historic, and therefore there have been more deaths there and more ghosts. And I like to go in and just like go into a bar and just sit down and just strike up a conversation with a bartender, the regulars, and catch stories just on that level where it's very casual, and I catch people off guard. You can really judge the sincerity that way.
Right, then you're finding out, and you hopefully you get right to this. They're not giving them a chance to build up a fake story,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You kind of strike it right on the cord. When you go to these locations, do you get to go in and investigate a lot of them as well, or do you just visit them?
I visit, and I don't do a lot of the investigating as far as like using the equipment myself, unless there's a ghost team with me, because I'm the photographer and the writer, and that takes up just about every minute of my time. My investigation tends to be more historical research. So first I get the basic information about what's happening there paranormal-wise, and then I hit the library, and I go to the reference section, and I dive into the archives. And sometimes there's absolutely no order to it, but very often it's as if somebody's leading me by the hand to that one little yellow piece of document that will explain why there's activity there. I'll find a little obituary or
sure.
An old article about a murder that took place there.
Now, out of the locations that you investigated and checked out for this website, did you have any really cool paranormal experience yourself doing this?
I have had a number of experiences while I'm visiting haunted places, and I never really expect to, because, you know, it's hit and miss, and usually people have to be at a place for a while before they'll have an encounter. So I'm always surprised, and my experiences haven't been that profound compared to others. One of the more interesting ones, I was at the St. James Hotel in Cimarron, New Mexico, which is an old hotel that was a hangout for the gunslingers in the late 1800s. Jesse James and a number of other famous gunslingers hung out there, and there's been no less than 20 murders there. And I went with a friend, and we stayed in the old part of the hotel. We were the only ones there that night, and I told my friend, I prepared to go to sleep, and I said, "Wake me up if something happens," and she said, "Don't wake me up if something does." Well, I fell right to sleep, and she lay there wide awake, afraid to sleep, and there was a transom window over the door, and there was a room across the hall with the door open, and the light was on in that room, and that was serving as her nightlight, and suddenly the light went out. And she tried to wake me up, but I was in a deep sleep. And then she heard pacing outside the room. But the footsteps didn't walk away. They remained. And finally she got me up, and I first looked for the most logical explanation. I said, "Well, you know, the light probably just burned out."
Right.
And I walked across the hallway, but it had been physically turned off. I was able to turn it back on. And then I said, "I bet somebody's messing with us." And I tried to walk away without making any noise, but that floor was so old and so creaky, there was no way you could move an inch without it shrieking. So that that really spooked her, and it just fascinated me. But I was most interested in the reports of a little, the ghost of a small figure, sometimes described as a little man with a pockmarked face, and sometimes described as a child. And this case had actually been featured on Unsolved Mysteries, and Unsolved Mysteries had had shown a reenactment, which that their creative minds had put together. They showed a boy of about 9 sitting on the bar spinning a bottle, with kind of a gargoyle-like face, and nobody really knew who he was. Well, I fell back asleep after my friend and I had that that weird thing in the middle of the night, and I came wide awake at dawn because I had the distinct sensation of a little hand patting my face. And I said, I want to go to the graveyard, and I want to see if we can find the ghost of a child. So we went, we found the graveyard where the family, the Lambert family, the one-time owners of the hotel, were buried. But there were hundreds of graves, and my friend said, oh, there's not going to be time for you to find it. We had to get you to your plane. But somehow my feet took me right to the plot, and there was the grave of little Johnny Lambert, who had died in the 1800s at age 2.5. Mm. And I said, I bet that's who the employee saw in the bar. And my friend said, oh, no, Unsolved Mysteries showed him as an older boy. I said, well, maybe they took creative license. And so as soon as I got back to Seattle, I tracked down the name of the witness, and I made a telephone call, and I got a hold of the witness's father. And he said, my son does not like to talk about it, but I'll tell you exactly what he told me. The young man had gone into work his first day on the job, and he looked up, and he saw a child of about 2.5 sitting on the bar spinning a bottle. And he said to the kid, hey, kid, what are you doing down here? You should get back to your room. At that point, the child looked up at him, and he saw that half of his face was horribly scarred as if it had been burned. And with that, the kid jumped off the bar and disappeared into the floor.
Wow.
And I think that was probably Johnny Lambert. Unfortunately, when I sent away for the death records, there was nothing recorded about how he had died.
Well, Leslie, you've got an interesting book. I highly recommend people pick up a copy of it. You know, hopefully we'll see if we can talk to your publisher and get a couple of copies to give away on the air in a future show here. And we'll pass a copy of the book on to Susan, our book reviewer, so she can take a look at it, read it, and review it on an upcoming episode as well.
All right. I'll have my publicist send you some copies.
That'd be great. Leslie, thank you very much. When is your next book due to come out?
Well, there's not one due right now. I'm actually working on a novel.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Another novel. I did 2 novels previous to writing the nonfiction books, and I'm working on another novel.
All right. Well, keep us in the loop. Let us know when stuff is coming out. We'd love to have you back on the show.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
Thank you, Leslie. And again, for more information on Leslie and on her books, you can go to check out her website at ghostygirl.com, GHOSTYGIRL.com. Again, that's ghostygirl.com. Our guest is Leslie Rule. Ghost in the Mirror, Real Cases of Spirit Encounters is the book. Thank you very much for tuning in and spending your evening here with Tim and I. We appreciate it. Come back tomorrow. Susan is going to be back here with a brand new book review. Bree Sanders, our national news correspondent, will be back with the weird and strange supernatural news from around the United States. And in hour 2 and 3, we're going to speak to Stephen Ulish. He became a professor at the age of 28. He spent the major part of his life researching occult material such as the Kabbalah and UFOs. Stephen's insightful writings are published on many paranormal and UFO sites. He's lectured and written about a wide variety of topics, reaching from anti-Semitism to UFOs, from Kabbalah to the occult in general. And tomorrow night, we're going to discuss his recent articles. And these sounded really great to me. The Reality of Ghosts, A Possible Biblical Explanation, and Extraterrestrials Tremble at the Name of Jesus. I'm interested in finding out why aliens would be affected by the name Jesus Christ.
Because they're all Satanists?
Could be. We'll find out tomorrow. Insightful thoughts and research from our guest, Stephen Ulish. Tune in tomorrow right here on Darkness Radio. We'll look forward to being back with you. And join us again in the live chat room tomorrow and share your thoughts and ideas with other like-minded visitors by going to darknessradio.com. Click on the live chat. We'll see you tomorrow.